Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the mobile Tuxedo Studios while the rain comes pouring down. And I just asked Ramsey if he could hear it. Maybe you can out there in podcast land. But, of course, it is Thursday. Ramsey Russell is joining us. Ramsey, got a big night ahead of you tonight.
Yeah, we're finally gonna put this Argentina short film out on the air tonight. But you know, asking me, can I hear something, Rocky? That's like asking Ray Charles to check your fine print on your contract or something, or read your prescription or something, man. And my ears are still ringing. After Saturday night, I taught my wife. And I almost didn't go. I can't believe I almost didn't go. I talked my wife into going to Birmingham to watch Kiss. And I hadn't been to a concert forever. And I used to go to concerts when I was young. And we went to see Kiss, the hottest band in the world. And, you know, they went through that whole disco BS unmasked phase back then. But I watched them when I was a child. And probably your little girl's age. I was a fan, you know. I can remember the first time I ever saw them. They came on some Halloween special on TV, and I couldn't have been but 10 or 11 years old. It scared me to death. I turned the channel, you know, and I flipped them back on. They had a slow song going later in that birthday. Later that year in that birthday, I got an album, Destroyer, and I became a huge Kiss fan. I thought it was cool. And what I've since learned is, you know, they are the original showmen. And just for, I don't know,
big time
nostalgia or just something to do, I said, man, I want to go see them. I went and saw them in Jackson, Mississippi in 1979. I just can't imagine dropping my 12-year-old child off at a rock concert. But times were different then, you know. It was the 70s. And me and one of my buddies got dropped off, and, you know, the Jackson floor. Now, look, I was telling somebody in line in Birmingham the other night, boy, times sure have changed. He said, well, I bet these concerts are still the same. I said, I don't know. Last time I saw Kiss, they were $9 or $9 or $10, you know, to go to a concert. And now they way more than that. My wife wouldn't tell me how much them tickets were. And but I know they were way more. And so
I heard
put proud
on a show.
Oh my God, was it was I laughed the whole time, and just like every other redneck in the crowd, sang half the songs, but they had this big old massive curtain. I mean, big huge curtain hanging over the stage, and they don't do little B-roll bands like they used to leading up to the show. So it's just piped in music, you know, kind of fit that demographic. And all of a sudden, the lights got down. Now nobody even flips a lighter no more at a concert. They're all showing their cell phones, you know, and it's just totally different from the last time I saw Kiss. But let me tell you this. They dropped that curtain. You'd hear the voices saying, oh, you asked for us. You got us the hottest band in the world. And when they dropped that curtain, the fireworks went off. The lights went off. Here these guys come down in a cloud of smoke from up top, just jamming on Detroit Rock City. And I bust out laughing. It was the best concert I've ever seen, just in terms. I don't care if you like the music. I hate it. Buddy, they put on a show. To be in their late 60s and 70 years old, still rocking like that, my wife couldn't hear nothing. I mean, she about went deaf. Of course, you know, you also see these people walking around nowadays, these modern folks walking to a rock concert with earplugs and hearing muffs. I'm like, man, that's crazy. It's a rock concert. But it was awesome. I laughed so hard and had such a good time watching those guys. And it was good the whole show. I mean, it was just amazing. Nobody puts on a show like that. But my ears are still ringing between shotgunning since 1979 and going to those rock concerts, including last Saturday. You're asking me, can I hear it raining? No truck over the phone. It's crazy. I can't hear nothing. But life is good.
Yeah, the reason that I'm laughing so hard about you can't hear anything. Hey, but anyway, my buddy went to the one in Memphis, the KISS concert in Memphis. He said it was awesome. Said it was one of the best shows he's ever been to.
And, you know, but I did not realize this. I didn't realize when I went that this was their last show in the United States.
Yep.
You know, and I'm glad I went, you know, because it was my wife had never seen them. And, she, you know, she wasn't a KISS fan growing up, but her big brother was. So the only song she kind of sort of knew was, you know, listening to him growing up. But it was a really, really good show. I just couldn't believe it, man. Those guys put on a heck of a show. I had a great time.
The reason I'm laughing so hard, you talking about you can't hear. Well, the biggest laugh that Forrest and I had turkey hunting last week was talking about you not being able to hear.
Mm-mm. No. I hate to say it.
Forrest, man, he had me cracking up. We were sitting in the spot waiting on some turkeys, and God, dog, he was sitting there telling me stories about you can't hear, and then you trying to make sound effects of things you've never heard before.
And
Forrest, did you hear him make the goblin sound effect a couple of weeks back? He said, yeah, it was awful, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a, I hate to say it, I have heard turkeys gobble, but not many of them. And you know, I remember, like a lot of guys today, we all know better. I mean, remember back when we were all children in the 70s. And 80s, you know, heck, when I was a baby, I stood up on the front seat of the car right next to my daddy or my mother, and they were both smoking in the car. You know, who does that anymore? They don't even smoke in rock concerts no more. That's crazy. The only smoke hanging over the whole Coliseum were the fireworks and pyrotechnics going off at the concert. You know, there wasn't nothing being smoked other than that I'm aware, and that times have just changed. But you know, now we put hearing protection on our children. And Forrest and Duncan are prime examples. They get to where they don't have to wear them anymore. They don't wear them, so they're going to be the same way I am. He don't believe it yet because he's a young man. But boy, all that shooting unprotected takes its toll on a guy. And I'll tell you, you know, some medication they gave me back in the burn unit way back when, they've since taken off the market because it caused tinnitus, which is not hearing thunder or hearing it rain in your car or hearing a turkey gobble. It's a high pitch buzzing in my ear, and I can't hear a real high pitch. And one of the funniest things about not being able to hear, I was taking algebra, which I hated anyway and wasn't any good at, but I went because the teacher was fairly attractive. I went and paid attention best I could, and at least to her, you know, whether I understood the subject matter or not. One day back in old chalkboard and days, and she was writing formulas or something. I was taking notes, and about that time, she slammed down the chalk and started scolding the class. Who is that? Why is that? Blah, 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 blah. I'm looking left, looking right, you know, look like everybody else. And finally, the girl behind me tugged on my shirt and said, turn your watch off. It's your alarm. And you know, I'd had that watch for years, and I just quit wearing that watch about a year ago, and I never heard the alarm go off. It was so high pitched, I couldn't hear the chime. But that's just a case of bad hearing. And it's only gotten worse after decades of shooting. And the downside of duck hunting versus anything else you might hunt, need a gun, you know, shoot a lot, or target practice, is, you know, you got to hear the ducks. You know, you have to hear the ducks to call to them. And you got to hear yourself call. You know, I do. I can't call through hearing protection or something, plugs in my ear. And I got a pair of those wild ears now, and I got to tell you, they were truly game changers. They're very expensive, I admit, But I wish I had afforded myself that kind of hearing protection way back when, because it's like wearing an old man hearing aid. Fits in your ear, customized, you know, and you could hear things. I was in a Dove field not long after getting them and could hear a conversation going on two or three blinds down. Could hear them talking. I had never heard that in the past. Sometimes, you know, you have to turn down the volumes you don't hear of the conversations you don't want to hear. But when I shoot, it protects my hearing. It's like wearing hearing protection. And when I call, I can hear myself call. And when ducks are above me, and how that whole thing started was being in a duck blind up in North Mississippi, and my host handed me some hearing protection down. I turned them on. Wow, I could hear stuff I hadn't heard in a while. And the next day, he handed them down again. And just being a smart alecky, I go, well, you trying to tell me something? Well, the whole blind chimed in. Yeah, son of a gun, you're deaf. You need to wear this stuff. Well, okay. You know, and it's the truth. But, yeah, man, my hearing terrible. Unless I'm at a rock concert, heck, I believe I could have heard them four blocks away. You know, as loud as that music was.
You don't hear it, but a couple of years from now, this is the day, and Ramsey and I already talked about this today, but I don't want to go in real in depth about it, but the Mueller report was released today. And I pose this question to Ramsey. No matter your political stance, I don't care if you're a D or R in the middle, whatever you are, shouldn't it be if we found out that our president is not guilty of colluding with the Russians, shouldn't we all be happy? Shouldn't that be a good thing?
No, we should all be happy. We should be celebrating in the streets, you know? But
yeah, I turned it on CNN right before Ramsey got it, and I got on the phone today. Dude, they're going nuts. Their head's about to explode because he's not guilty.
They've been making mountains out of molehills since the day after he was elected. And now that the molehill ain't really a mountain, now they're going around digging shovel holes of dirt, throwing on the ground, and still trying to make it a molehill. And the truth of the matter is, if all I could think when they came out with this whole accusation against our president, not their president, our president, all I could think is, you know, this is like the shag, the spy that shagged me. If Russia is influencing the American elections, we got a whole lot bigger problems than who is the figurehead in this country. But they just started the day after, right after. Where in American history has a special investigative team ever come out to just scrutinize every single thing this person has done, I guess, for his entire life? You know, trying to find something. I mean, come look at my past. I can tell you, after seeing this whole thing blow up, I just realized I'm not destined to be president, you know? Whether I chop down my daddy's cherry tree or not, it just ain't going to happen. And, what a crazy situation.
You said, well, Rocky, there's a thing out there called Trump derangement syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
TDS is what it's called. So I looked it up and did a little bit of reading on it. And, man, it's a real thing. I know that people disliked Obama, that were conservative or Republican. But, man, you know, this is the thing I want to ask you. I'll give you a fine example. Robert De Niro, one of my favorite actors in the world. He has gone psycho since Trump got elected. I'm just asking you personally, would you stop going to somebody's movies because of the wacko they're acting over Trump?
And
should actors just stay in their lane and dance like a monkey like they're paid to do?
You know, that's just it. Back in the old ancient Roman days, when Caesar came to give a speech to the public, you know, something important society should hear, prostitutes and actors were excluded, and gladiators. Those three categories of people were excluded because they really weren't human enough or important enough to you know, even come listen to the Caesar speak. And my, how things have changed. You know, who cares what, seriously, what your political views are, Rocky? I mean, really and truly, I live my life through my political views. And I sure don't care what an overpaid actor's views are. I could care less. I mean, yeah, dance, you know, clap. He's like that little monkey with cymbals. Just get up there and dance, you know, and entertain me. And I'll pay you too much money to come see your movie if I like it. And otherwise, I don't care. But, Rocky, I told you, you know, my wife and I get up every morning and see Parker off to school and turn on the TV for 30 minutes to an hour, and we watch. She loves the Today Show, you know, the highlights and what's going on. And I kind of like the CBS version of it, but they're all the same. And, you know, I guess since college, I've gotten up and drank a cup of coffee or two every morning just to wake up. That ain't nothing compared to an hour of shouting at the TV. And I shouted every one of them. I mean, it's all just lunacy. It's just lunacy. It's just make something up and run with it. You know, it's not news. It's some kind of entertainment. I just look at it like shout at the TV hour. And boy, Anita just, it drives her crazy. But somebody going to get shouted at on the TV for being an idiot every time I turn on the news every morning, you know. But it's just nuts. It's just crazy. And here's the deal. I didn't like Obama. I met with a Secret Service agent one time. It was a real, real interesting conversation. And he said something I've never forgotten. He said, the office is bigger than the person. That's, you know, right. It's the office. It's the president of the United States of America. And just today I read something. It was pretty interesting, a little article. Somebody wrote, they had, I don't know what the title was, something like Live from a Seattle coffee shop, hipster coffee shop or something. And she's a millennial, but apparently she's conservative leaning. And one statistic that jumped out of my mind is here's all these millennials calling for an end to capitalism, an end to the American way. I mean, who's this little lady that's all over the news from the Bronx? What an idiot. And so many people are piping into this whole socialist thing, you know. And her whole point of the article is that's because you've never known anything else. Our poverty level in America is 31 times greater in monetary value than the world average of poverty. I mean, and still, we're just one click away from having Amazon deliver anything you want to the door because of available credit availability. I mean, we're not a poor country. You know, we have first world problems, and capitalism, thank you, has done it to where we can all go out and chase opportunities, chase the American dream, which is not guaranteed success. It's the opportunity to chase it. What a great country to live in. That we can all talk freely about corn in the Midwest or Crocs or anything we want to. You know, but it's just... I thought that was a real good article she made.
I'll say this, Ramsey. Look, there were conservatives and Republicans that disliked Obama. I agree with that. But they saw the office, not the person.
That's right.
Here's the difference between, I think, man, I didn't want, because we got a long ways to go, turn into this today. But the difference between liberals and conservatives, there were churches around the nation praying for Obama to be successful. Liberals do nothing but scream as loud as they can for Trump to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that the president succeeds. That's right. If he succeeds, the country succeeds.
And the truth of the matter is, in a land of opportunity, What we want is for every person in America to be successful, which is not to say they're going to be worth $50 billion, but to be successful, to find something they like, and to be to productively contribute to society. Because, you know, if you're in a little old zip code, if everybody in your zip code is contributing positively to the local economy, you live in a very good zip code. You follow what I'm saying? Expand that to America. Expand that to the state. Expand that to everybody. I want everybody to succeed because it's good. It's good for my business. It's good for your business. Money circulates around us the way the economy works. Why do we want anybody to fail? Why do we want our country to fail? We're the greatest country on earth. And man, if somebody gets to travel around and see it, there's a lot of places I love to visit. There's a lot of places I love to hunt. I love interesting cultures. I love different foods. But at the end of the day, man, I always, when I walk on the into my driveway, I want to just kneel down and kiss the ground. And thankful that I live in such a great country. You know, thankful, very thankful. I just don't understand it. I guess I'm getting old, Rocky.
Here's the thing that I think that the people that are screaming the loudest that hate Trump, it's because Trump is the first Republican president that has used the Democrat playbook in how he operates every day. He works on people's emotions. That's what Democrats have been doing forever. So, you know what? He pokes the bear all the time.
All the time. You know,
I'm sending the illegals to sanctuary cities.
Everybody gives him grief about his tweets. Oh, that was such a great,
smartest thing ever.
I mean, who wouldn't have done it? Yeah, you want to be a sanctuary city? Well, hey, look, I got a bunch of them down here. I'm going to send you. Oh, no. I don't, not really. I want to be a sanctuary city to stick my middle finger at you, but not really a sanctuary city. You know, and it's crazy. It's nuts. And, you know, isn't it funny how much we talk politics in a duck blind or duck camp and never can solve the problem? It's like, you know, I love during election years and election times, you see that, and I think they're staged when the public, you know, raises their hand and stands up and asks the presidential candidate, the political candidate a question, you know, and the question I've always wanted to ask, I've always wanted to stand up and say, could you tell me what a loaf of bread costs, or what a gallon of gas, or what a pound of beef costs? I guarantee none of those politicians up there could tell you. But that's what affects my life. Let gas
that's
price
right.
double. That affects everybody I know. You know, let a gallon of milk go through the roof back when I had a house full of teenagers. That affects me in the back pocket. You know, so, yeah. You know, that's a question I'd like to ask them. But, man, one thing true is that I really don't know how much those folks up there really, truly represent me personal. But the system works.
I'll close it out by saying this. I long for the days of the Ted Williams, the Jimmy Stewarts, the Kirk Douglas, the Clark Gables of the world that had pride in their country. They weren't going around the world apologizing for the United States being superior. It is superior. Mm-hmm. I long for those days. I watched a documentary on Ted Williams this past weekend. Awesome. It's on Netflix. If you hadn't seen it, you need to see it. The man loved his country. He put his life on hold to go fight in World War II and the Korean War. The greatest hitter ever to play Major League Baseball. If he would have stayed in for those 4 or 6 years, I can't remember, he would have broke every record there was. But he put his life on hold because he loved his country. That's the days I long for.
Yeah, well, I love my country, and everybody I know does. I really don't associate with a lot of them folks. I wonder who they are. It's like watching television and seeing those kinds of people on TV anymore. Just makes me, it's like watching a movie, an alien movie, or just arriving on Mars or something. Like, who are these people? You know, speaking of which, we owe our soldiers we owe our military a lot. You know, talking about, you know, Ted Williams going to military and all those guys in the world's greatest generation did this. But I'll give you an update on Duncan. Duncan, of course, in the U.S. Marine Corps. Y'all know that. And he's been out in Oklahoma because he wanted to be infantry like all them kids. Well, he's artillery. Artillery, they're instructed by the Army. The Army teaches Marines artillery. And he will graduate artillery school on May 8th. Ships out to his duty station, which is going to be Okinawa, Japan.
Oh, wow.
So he's going to Okinawa. And where he goes from there is anybody's guess. You know, he vacillates between, you know, career and not career, but we don't know. I'm proud for him just being in there and sticking to it and doing it. And that's what we get to see him. We'll get to see him here and then see him off. And one thing he wants when he comes home, you know, nothing doesn't fall far from a tree. I said, what do you want when you come home? He says, crawfish. There's no crawfish in Oklahoma. I want crawfish when I come home, so we're going to cook some crawfish when he comes home.
Well, speaking of successful careers, part two of Life Short, Get Ducks is coming out tonight. And what a great story.
I'm proud of it.
I want to say that I'm one of the few lucky ones that got a sneak preview of what's coming up, and it is really good. I'll say that. Really, really good.
I hope everybody enjoyed it, because everybody knows, or I hope y'all know, you know, what we're trying to do. Notice we ain't got any sponsors. This is a thing by Get Ducks. It's important to me to tell the story. Just in the same sense, I love listening to your guests tell their stories online. You know, we all duck hunt, but you know, you just think of how much sitting in a duck blind really isn't pulling the trigger shooting ducks. It's that people component. Talking politics, talking fixing world problems, talking recipes, talking kids, talking dogs. I mean, we spend so much time, the whole event, from the time we leave home, the time we get back, going to duck camp for the weekend, just among people, among fellow hunters. And that's one thing, you know, I really, really did well finding Jake and working with Jake on this project, because he gets it. He gets it. He really gets the story I'm trying to tell, which is just duck hunting. And if you're coming on there looking for just an absolute slaughter fest, you probably ain't going to like it. You know, we shoot ducks, of course, because we're duck hunting, but we're doing 7 to 8 minutes. That's our target. You know, attention spans and time. We decided we wanted to hit that 7 to 8 minute mark. We wanted to tell a story in 7 to 8 minutes. And last year, I spent a long time down in Argentina. We did some remote podcasts from down there. Last year, I spent a lot of time in this big remote marsh that we call Rio Salado. It's a massive wetland. It was in drought last year. It's not this year. Well, that's for sure. That's going to be a totally different season down there this year than last. But I tell you, I found this place through a partner of mine down there, a lady we hired named Martha Ciafone. And she had told me about it, and we were down there scouting in early spring, right when the season had opened. It was still hot, it was still warm there. And we drove up way back when. I had a few adventure clients, I call them, that just wanted to go kick around and explore with me, and we all showed up. And it was hot, man. I mean, it started off in the morning, 70 degrees, 74 degrees, and warm up into the high 80s and 90s, you know, during the day. It was hot, you know, for duck hunting. But we were, by gosh, shooting ducks. I mean, we shooting ducks. Like, I never shot ducks. And we, you know, raw, pure duck hunting by yourself with your guide. The first hunt I ever did there, I walked. I know I walked a half mile in about ankle-deep water. And, I mean, I walked through five places that looked exactly like the one we stopped at. And started shooting ducks, man. It was just amazing. And at times he would pat me on the back, Senor, pato, pato, you know, and I'm like, I was just sitting there slack jawed like a calf looking at a new gate, watching all these ducks, thinking, my gosh, this is wild. This is a crazy, wild place, unlike anything I've ever been to. And I fell in love with it. I told Martin, you'll hear me say it every time we ever talk about this place. I want my ashes scattered there. It's just that kind of place. I love being that remote with that kind of duck hunting, hunting by yourself with calls and decoys and, you know, no bait piles, just hunting. I love that. And, you know, of course, it was so hot. So I had packed some shorts and T-shirts because it was hot. And I guess because the operator saw me, you know, wearing shorts and T-shirts, he saw my scars. And I guess it just, for whatever reason, one afternoon right after the hunt, you know, he and I were just talking via interpreter, Martha, and he just started telling me this story about, you know, an event, a traumatic event he had in his past. And I'd never heard him say it again. but I just assumed everybody knew it. And so knowing Jake was going to come down here and film this incredible wild hunt, you know, follow with me here, because it's like when I was the first hunt I did at this particular place, I'd never walked a half mile into a marsh to go hunt ducks in Argentina. I always just kind of drop you off and you walk 10, 15 yards and do a little old blind and shoot ducks. But I just remember just like this thinking, like, you know, I've been down to Argentina so many times, and it culminated right here on this set of footprints into a marsh to where I'm standing right now. And it's like all those hunts and everything just culminated right here in this special place. Like I was on this path to get here. And that's just how I felt. That's what I remember thinking when I was watching all these ducks. For as far as I could see, it's like the Louisiana marsh and these ducks flying, you know, here, there, and yonder. And he told me this story. And so I thought last year when Jake come down, I said, you know, knowing his story, it was kind of like parallel pasts. And his traumatic event put him on a path that led him here. And our path crossed, and, you know, we're real friends. But you don't have time to really get into depth. It's not a documentary about that. It's a documentary about duck hunting and this wild place and this adventure and this waterfowl odyssey, you know, around the world. And so I texted Martha before Jake got there. I said, hey, tell David I want him to tell a story. She wrote back, no. I said, no, ask him. She said, no, I did. He said, no. I said, what? Well, he told me this years ago. So we got down there, you know, last year. I was down there for a long time, and I got down there, and I just kind of broached the subject with him, and he said something to the effect, no, senor, it makes me uncomfortable. That's what he said. And so I let it lay. And we hunted a couple of groups, and there were a couple of gentlemen there, a little group there 1 week, and they didn't want to go out that afternoon. They were tired. And so we'd hunted that morning, and then that afternoon we stayed in. Beautiful day outside. We were watching, I don't know what we were watching on TV, just talking, carrying on like you do mid-afternoon, nothing going on. And one of his guides, I can't remember the little boy's name, he kept running to the drink cooler and loading his shirt with beers and disappearing. About the third time he come in, I said, well, the boys must have taken off today. They're probably just hanging out drinking beer. I went and got me a beer and went back there. Now, look, this little boy looked like a child. I mean, he was probably, you know, 5 foot even and looked like just a little teenager. Like, he wasn't even old enough to drive a truck, really, what he looked like. And some of us had been asking him, you know, querying him at dinner, like, hey, how old are you? 21. And we called BS, and he pulled out his ID. Sure enough, there was his face and said 21 years old. You know, if you added up the birth dates and all, and that's fake. And sure enough, come to find out, this kid's only 15, 16 years old. And so he was the bottom of the totem pole. That's why he'd been sent in to fetch beer. And I walked back, you know, around the complex, bumped into Martha, and she walked back there with me. And sure enough, there was all my guide, the operator, and several other folks just sitting there just taking an afternoon off, drinking a few beers, telling stories, listening to a little music on the radio, you know, just hanging out. So I started drinking beer and hanging out with them too. And we started talking. I need a translator. I know a few words, but I can't sit there and just rattle off a conversation. And so my translator and I are talking. We're having a conversation about ducks, plans for next week, what we're going to do, this, that, and another. And the hunt had been, you know, despite what could have been, with that bad drought, it really wasn't a bad hunt. I mean, there's a lot of operators down there that shoot what we were shooting on just an average year, not a bad year. I mean, you know, we were doing okay, I felt like. And it just, you know, the conversation evolved such that I just said to myself, I'm going to make another pass because Jake is showing up next week to film, and I'm going to make another pass. And I can be persuaded, Rocky. So I'm going to make another pass at this guy. And so, with my translator, you know, we're sitting there talking. I said, David, you know, I'd like to tell the story. No. And we started talking about it back and forth. And first thing that became apparent was Def Ramsey done blundered into something. I mean, apparently nobody on his staff knew this story. And, you know, just kind of like his crossed the barrier, he hadn't told anybody. Well, they knew now. And, you know, so we're talking, and I said, well, you know, here's what I want to tell. Here's why it's important to me. You know, because I think it's really, I think it's just a great story. And I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something to the effect. He said, you know, it was very traumatic. It was a very, very emotionally traumatic experience for me. And you're over it. And understand, you know, Hispanics don't talk real quiet and deliberate like I'm talking now. When he was animated. He was getting after it, you know. And not being ugly, just he was excited about it. And he said, you know, it's a very, I don't want to say it. And, you know, but it was very, and what he said was, you know, you're over it. You're over your event, but I'm not. And so, you know, we had just done this podcast, Rocky. I mean, my phone was, I was still getting texts from high school people I hadn't seen in 30 years and telling my story on End of the Line podcast. And I remember the discussion we'd had, you know, and I'll tell y'all this. I mean, talking through on them podcasts kind of really helped me sort the cobwebs and sort everything out, you know, about my own event. Just to speak it out loud and say it and think through it. And so I was looking at my feet so I could think while I was speaking deliberately to him and telling him my story, telling him, hey, great, you think I'm over mine, but, you know, as recently as a year and a half ago, I'd wake up with night terrors, screaming, wake up my children, wake up my wife, hollering at something, swinging at something, demons. And I told him that story about, you know, trauma. It's like when an egg drops, you know, it's like Humpty Dumpty. You can pick him up and you can glue him back together again, but it ain't the same. It's just not the same. And so we're in the same boat. And you know, maybe just letting the world have a glimpse of this would, you know, help. And Martha kind of bumped me in the shins with her boot under the table. She says, look up at him. And I looked up, and he had these tears just streaming down his face. And you know, this is a very strong and macho kind of guy. Last thing on God's earth I expect to see him was cry, weep. And he stood up, and he held his arms open. He said, mi hermano, my brother, my brother. He hugged me. He said, I'll tell that story. Not in detail. I'll tell that story like you want. And you'll see the story on this podcast very briefly. You know, very briefly. And you know, he showed up and we sat down and his all in Spanish. And we had a translator there. Translated my sentence. Jake did a very, very, very good job of putting together in about 70, 80 seconds his story very quickly. But what had happened was, and you got to understand, parts of Argentina, you know, think about this, and I don't know the exact numbers, but let's say if Argentina, which is a big country, Argentina is a big country. I don't know how it compares to the United States, but I bet landmass is fairly comparable to the United States. It's a big country. It's a big country. At least it's 2/3 as big in the United States of America. And, you know, if there's 15 million Argentines, 5 or 6 million of them live just in Buenos Aires. I mean, that's a massive, it's like fourth largest city in the world. You know, when you get way out in the country, I'm not going to say they're poor, but they're simple people. They're just simple people. And when this person, you know, rather than be a laborer or something like that, he actually became a policeman. And I think his family was very, very proud of him. Because that's a noble job. It's a very, very good and respected job. for just regular folks. So he became a policeman. And one day he was providing security for a drugstore. And just, you know, a guy walked in the door and pulled a gun out. He's there to rob the place. And he shot, and Evade shot back. And the guy left through the front door, and about that time, phew, a bullet goes whizzing by him. Well, there's another one in the store somewhere else. Two of them. So he edges the building. The guy shoots him. He rolls over a car. When the guy comes around the car to finish him off, he has to kill the guy in self-defense. And, you know, you can see where, number one, that would be pretty traumatic for anybody to have to do that. You can see where, number two, I've seen the scar where he got shot. You see where, number two, he decided there might be another line of work I want to pursue now. And he got into the duck guiding business with some outfits along the river, and later started his own operation. And my guide, who was one of the best guys down there, I love this guy, Checho, was explained to me one morning, and even though I don't speak Spanish and he doesn't speak English, we can have these kinds of conversations. You learn that, you know, while you're down there, you can have these kinds of conversations without speaking fluent each other's language. But what he was explaining to me is that everybody, nearly everybody Checho knows in that part of the world that is a duck guide wants to become this person's duck guide. They want to work with David because, you know, they see wherever they are now, near the river or somewhere else, that once they elevate to a skill set that this guy will hire them and teach them, and they've made it. They're successful. He pays him good. He treats him good. But, you know, he's a very, very well respected. That's what I'm trying to say. He's very, very well respected in that community. And, but anyway, that's kind of where the parallel paths and the converging paths and, you know, in that moment, in that conversation, we'd been friends. You know, we had been friends. I'd heard his story. He kind of knew mine. But he didn't hear the full story until that afternoon. And even though we'd been friends and we'd been working together, you know, in that afternoon over a couple of beers, talking about real human stuff, we became like foxhole brothers. And that's kind of where this story comes out to. Now don't get me wrong, it's a great film about Argentina duck hunting in a very, very wild place. It's not the kind of place that everybody wants to go and hunt. It is not for everybody. It's very remote. It's a long drive, hard to get to. You got to have a little mobility to get out in those duck blinds. And that first time I ever visited him, I so loved it. And I liked him. I liked his staff. And I just liked that real duck hunting. That I said, well, I'm going to represent this, but nobody is ever going to come. Nobody is ever going to fly overnight to get to Buenos Aires and then turn around and drive as far. It'll never happen. Never, ever, ever, never, ever will it happen. But I owe it to the guy because I really like this hunt. I couldn't believe it. Bing! I published the hunt. Boom! It comes up online. An old client of mine from out in Montana or Wyoming, I can't remember which, called me up. Week, 10 days later, says, you finally got the hunt I want to go on. And he put a team of, whatever, 6 or 7 together. Next year, that group had fractionalized into 2 groups of 6. The following year, 3 groups of 6. We try to run just 6 a week, sometimes 8. And the rest is history. Still not for everybody. I'm never going to, I don't think, sell the guy out. Because, you know, it takes a lot of wherewithal, just a lot of gumption to want to dig and go that far, that extra, and to hunt like that, you know. But it is for a lot of us. It is, you know, going to Argentina as compared to hunting at Southern Warren County, Mississippi, is like going to Disneyland. But this is not the it's the real deal. It's the real duck hunt. It's just Argentina. is hunting in a blind by yourself with skilled guides, dedicated guides, and a dedicated operator. And that's what we try to convey, and we're very excited for this film, Rocky. I am absolutely in complete and utter awe of Jake, his eye for detail. And Jake kind of freaks me out. Y'all know I like to talk a lot. Jake doesn't talk just a ton. He's a quiet guy because he's always thinking and always tinkering and always doing something with his cameras and all that kind of stuff. So it makes me a little uneasy when we first started working together that he's so quiet.
I become
a little quiet, you know. But Jake, it's how he processes, and he sees things, and he can record things that just leave me in awe. It just how he just gets what I'm saying in a sentence. Hey, here's what I'm thinking the story ought to be. Here's the sub story. Here's the subplot, and here's the big picture. And that's all you got to say. That's all I have to say. Just step back and let Jake be Jake. And make greatness.
For those of you that's, I want to say this, for those of you that's listening to this and about to see it, we're recording this about 6 o'clock right now on Thursday afternoon. You're about to see this in a couple of hours. I want you to pay attention to the B-roll, just the detail in the B-roll that Jake put in this video. It's unbelievable. A lot of things that people just, they don't pay attention to. I'll give you one. The chicken. Just catching the chicken. Using that on. You're going to see that. I mean, simple things like that that just regular old video camera guys don't think of. Just capturing that moment.
The features on people's face. It's just those little bitty nuggets. Of just those little, the hot coals glowing, the reflection of the guide in the rearview mirror. It's those little bitty details that, I mean, Jake sees that, and it gives it, you know, I tell the story, but Jake gives it life at a level that it far surpasses anything I've ever done. We're trying to turn, you know, we're not under some kind of corporate sponsor metric to turn something out, you know. So our goal is to turn one out every couple of months, and we've got our this will be number 2 of 6. We've got a good lineup for the coming year, and we're just going to keep on going. And you'll see. For those that don't know me well enough, you know, this is not a run through the list of get ducks hunts. It is not. We did Australia. Very good story. Just coincided with an anniversary that I was there, and it really gave us a bearing and a direction for the series. Great hunt, new hunt. We're doing Argentina this time with this story, The Path. Next up is Mexico, one of a really nice Mexico hunt we've got. A little bit different angle than probably what a lot are expecting, because it's Mexico. It's a very, very, very good hunt. Then following up with Azerbaijan, and which is way off the beaten path in the world of duck hunting, but it's a very, very interesting hunt. And after that is going to come, in no particular order, is going to come Nebraska, which is part of our U.S. hunt list. It's going to be Wyoming. Both of those take place on the North Platte River. Quite a ways apart, but still very, very good hunting adventures for mallards and Canada geese. And the last, I believe, I've got my timing right. I think this is going to come out in December. Is going to be Alaska. And it's totally a self-hunt. Because, believe it or not, guys, I do hunt, you know, on my own. And not just these far-flung guided places and these things we do. And it was a kind of a personal quest for mine. I worked through a friend. Rented boat taxis and hit the shore with a sack of decoys, walked miles to find the ducks, and played the tides and got my bear's gold tonight, you know. And next up, we've got a nice combination of very similar. So I hope it's something that will relate to everybody. I hope it leaves everybody feeling good. I hope everybody enjoys it. You know, it's just what compels me so much about what we do is that people component. It is the birds. It is the birds. It's the resource. The hunt, the hunters, and the hunted. That's just kind of what gets me. But the people, I never get tired of hearing people's stories of the different things, the different observations. I think it's the end of the day. I enjoy the people component as much as anything else. So anyway, it's going to air tonight. We were going to turn it out Sunday, but there was another release coming out. I didn't want to crowd them. I delayed it till today, and we've got a few little. Jay's got a few more little nuggets, I don't know what you call them, little accessory pieces to come out after that, kind of fill it in. But I wanted to tell the story because I just want to tell this story about this particular operator, why it's the path. I want to talk about the path, you know, because our paths converged in this really, really nice place. This year we're going back down to the same place in a wet year, not a dry year. It'll be a little bit different story, totally different story. And then we're going to another, probably one of our top hunts down in Argentina. It is suited for every single person that don't want to drive off in the middle of the boondocks. But they're totally two different stories. So anyway, I hope y'all enjoy it.
And what time did you say?
7:55, I think it's gonna go off. We're gonna drop it at about 8:00. You know, I don't know what I'm not smart enough to figure out a good time to. I don't know when you should put stuff online, but it'll be everywhere. We're publishing it on our Get Ducks Facebook page. It'll also be on Instagram TV. It'll also be on YouTube. And by this time tomorrow, it'll be throughout our website. Just, you know, with that respective hunt, and then in the video gallery, Life Short Get Ducks, where we're cataloging everything. It'll be everywhere. And we've got, believe it or not, we've got a lot of clients. Thousands of clients that I don't care how old they are, they don't play on social media at all. And we always, you know, within a month, we'll send out an email blast, and kind of a lot of them are looking forward to it just because they've been there, or they booked a hunt there, or they were there when this was being filmed, and they've asked us a lot about it. They saw Jake and kind of got the gist of the project we were working on. But it'll be out about 8:00 tonight.
I know it'll do well. I know it'll do real well. But, Ramsey, thank you for giving us a little bit of backstory, you know, a little more depth to what people are going to be seeing tonight. And I'm sure everybody that's going to see this tonight, hey, share it. Go on and share it yourself when you see it.
Oh, please do. Yeah, I'd appreciate you. If you like it, share it, you know.
And let me ask you that. You know, Ramsey gives a lot to be on here once a week. And I'm asking you. He's not asking you. I'm asking you. You know, man's a wealth of knowledge. Spends time on here every week with us. Just do that for him. Share that video when you see it. But, Ramsey, thank you again. I appreciate it. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast. Powered by DuckSouth.com.